Well, hello, May. Welcome to another week of Dialogue Conspiracy. We've been getting mail.
Yeah, a lot of postcards, huh?
Can I answer some of them, I guess? People are being encouraged to write and ask questions or just comment and indicate that they're listening. And a lot of people are writing and they're asking questions. And the address is Box 3904 in Carmel, California, if you have the desire to write. And if you put your address on it, you'll get a personal reply,
No.
assuming May has enough time, and assuming that your question, warrants a reply, you'll get it.
And I'll answer some on the air because whenever somebody has a question, it represents what a lot of people are thinking. Usually, Phil. In fact, there are two cards specifically that I want to talk about today. I just saw them when I came into the station. Somebody wrote and said, "I listen to your talk show every chance possible. Thank you for putting the facts of conspiracy in the news." So there's no excuse for people to say they never knew anything about the political overthrow that is going on. I appreciate that this person knows that even though we have news control by the major media, we've talked about this before on the show, that there is no excuse for people within range of my voice to not have an idea of some of the things I'm saying and to look them up. And if just one thing I say is right out of a whole hour show or out of a month's show, it should make people frightened and take some action. And I'm trying to give certain facts or information about our government. I made a big decision, Phil, I told you about this morning. We've been talking about conspiracy newsletter that I was going to do for Paul Krasner, the realist was going to publish it. And I've been sitting for 2 weeks at my desk putting together the organization of the conspiracy, the overthrow of the government, trying to provide information for people. And I sat and looked at the massive amount of material that I've accumulated for 9 years in my research. And I had promised myself 2 years ago or 3 years ago, based upon 6 years research at the time, that I was going to leave the United States by the fall of 72. And I had my house up for sale, and there was an accident. The family delayed us. We had our papers filled out for another country. And I stalled things off, but I knew that I wanted to be out of this country, and I think I should go. So the conspiracy newsletter is off. I'm not going to publish it. I'll do separate articles for Paul and the Realist and for Computer and Automation and other publications. But it takes too much time for me to sit and write because I have a large house and a lot of things to pack up. So I'm going to start closing off my home and our things and getting things packed up. And I'm going to be out of the country in 2 months. I'm going to be away from here, and I'm going to leave it all to you lovely people. I'll write and send you messages. But I'm leaving, and I intended to leave 2 years ago, and I'm not going to sit with a typewriter. It'd be like somebody sitting in Nazi Germany in 1933, and they did this. Plenty of people did it, and they wrote letters about what was wrong with Hitler. And they stayed there so long and wrote so long that they were barbecued along with everybody else. There comes a point where you have to be objective about what the actual evidence is and not live in your fantasy that you can do everything that you want to do. If I've planted any seeds, in people's minds or any means of opening up ways to get information about the 1960s and 70s, I'm grateful for the chance on the radio program to do that. And that's the most I can do, and I'll keep doing it as long as I'm alive. But I owe it to my family, my children, and ourselves on the basis of what I know to get out of this country now. And the shooting of Wallace was so contrived. We'll go into that a little more. And there's going to be more killings. There's going to be grenades and a bomb's going to go off in Congress. It's going to take a large amount of public officials, and a lot of repressions are going to come down. And I'm going to be out of here. And I think some of the show, or maybe all of it, I'm going to tell you some of the reasons I won't be here and why I think you should begin to do a little more serious investigation for your own lives, those who can't leave the country. One person wrote a card and said, "I listen to Dialogue Conspiracy, and I'm confused as to who is behind the conspiracy and its purpose." So I'll answer that. That's a good question. I rant with a lot of names and facts and information. Who is behind the conspiracy? A brief summary is this, if I can keep it brief. At the end of World War I, the Germans lost. They were very proud people. They believed in class system, slave labor, and the ruling classes. They were embarrassed by the defeat of World War I, the Germans were embarrassed by the defeat, and they weren't sorry for all the pillage and deaths that had happened. They were mad about losing the war. And at the same time that World War I was over, and Germany was ordered by the Versailles Treaty not to rearm again and cause a war on the soil of Europe like they had before, at the same time that World War I was over, the Soviet Union came into existence in those same years, and the communists took over the government. They took over the rich, noble oil fields that Rockefeller had his fingers in. John J. McCloy had large industries in Germany. The two members of the Warren Commission, Alan Dulles and John J. McCloy, were very heavy in protecting investments on the face of Europe. And everybody who had large economic holdings got nervous that their holdings could be overthrown by the masses, that someday the masses of people would catch on that a handful of people owned all the wealth, and that they would be overthrown like the Russians had been overthrown, the Tsar and his family. So America, the munition makers, oil, steel, the people who want to control the grease that runs the machinery of the nation, the industrial, the oil grease, it's really oil, that keep this nation going in terms of cars, factories, wealth, they rearmed Germany illegally, secretly, as a bulwark against communism that was in Europe. And the same lawyer, Alan Dulles, who represented the firm that financed Hitler, was sitting over in Switzerland at the time of World War II, and Alan Dulles was representing Rockefeller's holdings in Germany and all the American investments in Germany, Mr. Paley, Columbia Broadcasting System on the Board of Regents, University of California, owned hundreds of thousands of dollars, up to millions of dollars in Germany and in Europe in investment. And Mr. Dulles was sitting in Switzerland ostensibly for our OSS as a spy system. And he was meeting constantly with the top Nazis that Rockefeller and John J. McCloy had put into power as a bulwark against Russia. And before the war was over, no matter what Germany did to everybody in Europe, before the war was over, the top Germans were meeting with Alan Dulles to make a deal to come to this country and make the world headquarters of Nazism in the United States instead of in Germany. Because they knew at the end of World War II, we'd say you can't rearm again in Germany. So they went down to Jamaica, Tyrol Club in Jamaica, the head of British intelligence in the United States, met with Paul Rygotarovsky, John Connally, the Nazi headquarters. His name is Paul Rygotarovsky. He's from Dallas, Texas. And these were wealthy of people who owned the oil fields of Russia before the Bolsheviks took them. George de Morenschild, the friend of Lee Harvey Oswald, his best friend, was of the noble oil family in Russia, the one that Rockefeller represented before George de Morenschild was owned that oil, his family, before the Russians took it. And de Morenschild was the one who got the job for Lee Oswald in the depository. See, I hit upon the world history. It's a long story, but my research started with the witnesses before the Warren Commission who were talking about Lee Harvey Oswald being a misfit, a loner, a no-good bum. And we'll talk about that because Time magazine describes him again as being a pathetic loner. This week, May 29th, Time refers to Lee Harvey Oswald as a pathetic loner who is mentally disturbed. He was in correspondence with John Connally and all the top Nazis of our United States as an agent of Navy intelligence. And I began to cross-file the witness testimony before the president, the commission on the assassination of President Kennedy. And a man would come by the name of Max Clark. And when Oswald came to Fort Worth from the Soviet Union, he right away picked up the phone and called Max Clark. Well, when I read the testimony of Max Clark, he's chief of Convair. He's the chief of intelligence at Convair, a large aircraft factory in the Fort Worth area. He was an FBI representative, and everybody Lee Harvey Oswald was with in the Dallas-Fort Worth area were espionage agents who were wealthy people who had land in the Soviet Union that they wanted a war against Russia. Again, to go back, like Mr. Dealey and Dealey Plaza wanted Kennedy to have a war against Russia in 1960. George de Morenschild had oil holdings. All these families that the Warren Report refers to as the white Russian community are wealthy people, and the Bolsheviks took their money. And this is why they had Oswald walking down New Orleans making a sign, you know, fair play for Cuba, or getting on a radio show. Oswald did a radio show and made a record with Ed Butler saying he was a Marxist. So So the people would resent a Marxist killing our president. Ed Butler works for Patrick Frawley from Technicolor and Schick Razor. He helped put Richard Nixon in power. Ed Butler writes articles about Cali now, getting Cali out. He produces secret evidence that, you know, Cali on the My Line to reduce the charges for Cali. Ed Butler is an employee of the far, far right wing in this country, and he worked with Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans. So the getting back to what's behind the conspiracy, the paper this week explains it as clear as I could tell you on what was behind the whole conspiracy. There was an article June the 1st saying the U.S. is facing a squeeze as oil dwindles. And it says that eventually we're going to have to bring in oil for all of our energy in the United States, that we're using up a lot of the oil that we can produce. Alaska has 2 million barrels a day when they start moving it along. But we need 16 million barrels a day. And by 1972, it was estimated we'd need 26 million barrels of oil. Well, the Monterey Herald had an article this week, and I wish
From the Associated Press.
Yeah, from the Associated Press. And I think if the people who listen to this show and take the show seriously, go to your libraries and get the back issue, go to the Monterey Herald. It's a small article, and it's dated June the 6th, 1972, and it's about the need of the Navy to develop a fleet to import oil. The article says, by 1985, we will need not only a huge fleet of tanker to import oil, but also a strong Navy to protect those ships, the Chief of Naval Material said. Now, I'm going to read this article, and I'm going to analyze it, because this is what the conspiracy is about. He said the Navy is developing plans for special aircraft-carrying vessels to convert convoys, such as tankers, in a low-threat intensity area where there'd be a possible war of interdiction or embarrassment at sea. Translated means that we're going to go overseas for our oil. We need oil. America's using up all the oil it has, and by 1985, we're going to have to import 50% of our oil. And our Navy is going to have to protect anyone who attacks us, who stops us from taking the oil from other shores. Now, that oil is going to have to come from Thailand, down New Zealand, Australia, all over the world. We are going to bring that oil, and we're going to use the armed forces to protect it. Now, see, Nixon went to China, and he stopped in Hong Kong, and one of his speeches was that the right of each nation should be able to determine its own destiny. In other words, Conley's going all over the world now in every oil country. He steps down from the Secretary of Treasury, which is the third or fourth most important job in the United States, to make oil deals. He'll go to Venezuela, and he's making a deal for oil. He's going to 15 oil stops. And the point is that if Venezuela has oil, the oil doesn't go back to the Venezuelans for hospitals, schools, roads, education, colleges. What's going to happen is the oil is going to America, and the Venezuelans can go to hell. And the top leaders will live well because they're making a deal. The book, Ryan, I'm jumping around a lot, but I want to bring a certain point clear. Reinhard Gehlen, who was chief of all Nazi intelligence of the Eastern Division under Adolf Hitler, had the intention to go right into Europe and make 40 million people slaves immediately, and another 40 million were to be killed as soon as they won that war with Russia. Now, they had no compunction. They were going to round them up. They figured the best way to kill 40 million was simply to starve them, put a big fence around it and supply no food, and they wouldn't even bother the gas chambers. And Reinhard Gehlen figured that that was the best thing to do, and then import the rest of the people as slaves to run the industrialization of Europe. Now, everywhere they conquered, this was the Nazi intention. This is the plan now, Conley, wherever he goes. A few people in Thailand or Vietnam will run each country like 22 families ran Pakistan. And the oil will come to America in exchange for the rulers of each country making their people slaves. We'll pull the oil because America has to have that oil. And the people who allow us to have it will be as rich as some Americans, and the rest will never get the oil, the benefit of the oil, in their own economy. The article goes on to say that Admiral Kidd, a former commander of the U.S. Sixth Fleet in the Mediterranean, was talking at the Edison Electric Institute convention. Now, this is power, is what the Warren Report, Warren Commission is about. The killing of Kennedy is the problem that John Kennedy was going to let some people determine their own destinies. And he said it loud and clear, just like the CIA gave him orders to go into Cuba. He did not go into Cuba, and he did not allow Castro to be killed. He had a big fight with Governor Smathers of Florida, who later became senator. He wanted Castro killed. Kennedy said he has a right to live and have his system, and we'll have ours. There was no guarantee that he would have taken orders to escalate Vietnam. None at all, even though people think that he's responsible as much as Eisenhower or Johnson. That's not true. If he didn't take orders on one thing, it's not proof that he would, you know, that's proof that he might not take them on another. But power, the Edison Company is where this man talks, because electric power and oil is what it's about. The article goes on, the National Petroleum Council says that by 1985, imported oil will account for 50% of the American needs. Now, here is the important part about the article. The United States, he says, is making ready now to build 1,450 tankers of 80,000-ton variety to handle the importing chores. But, he says, they need a Navy. The United States is making the tankers to bring the oil, but they're going to need a Navy to guard those tankers against any actions that are formulated by whim or spur-of-the-moment national policy in our country. No matter who runs for president, like McGovern gets in, or no matter who gets in, he calls that a spur-of-the-moment national policy, because the Council of Foreign Relations and the National Security Council have decided what they're going to do. And anyone who bucks them, they're not going to kill everybody, but they're going to take that oil. And no spur-of-the-moment national policy, he says, or the urging of some big brother is going to stop us. Now, in summary, what this commander is saying of the Navy is that they're developing the vessels and the ships to protect the actual robbery of the resources of any nation. Our, you know, weapons, missiles, you know, atomic bombs, we'll use any means necessary. We're going to take that oil because this country needs it. I have a friend who's over in Europe who attended a conference in one of the countries of members of European nations. And they began, this is the way the conference went. They began talking about use energy. It was called the Conference on Energy, that we used to use slaves and animals. And then we went into, you know, wheels and machinery and then electric power, now oil. And they said, we need oil. This was about 4 weeks ago that I got this tape about this particular conference. And he came out and said, we need the oil and we're going to get it because that's the way we run. Our machinery runs, our government runs. Therefore, we will send more people into South Africa, into Arabia, into New Zealand, into where the natives are. And we will take over these countries because we need that oil. And they were very clear about it and outspoken. And they're a group that are very European, and they don't give a bean, you know, about the nationals or the individual nations. And about, that was a few weeks ago that I got this tape, and now there's an article saying we're going to get the oil. Now, that's what the killing of Kennedy was about. The men who sat on the Warren Commission, John J. McCloy and Alan Dulles, represent tremendous oil firms, lawyers for oil firms and other minerals. There's all kinds of minerals that control the world, but the oil is the important thing. Rockefeller, his attorney was John Mitchell. And there's a very close link between John Mitchell, John Conley, the Texas oil people, and so forth.
So they're for George in Santa Cruz is the answer to his... that's the short answer to your question, George.
Do you think I answered it? I mean,
I think so.
Around,
if not, George will be writing you again.
He asked
George in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, he said he's confused who is behind the conspiracy and its purposes. The National Security Council, the Foreign Relations Committee in New York, that meet their little private little clubhouse, they're made up of people who control the oil of the world, and they're not going to have any man for president who throws away the opportunity to continue controlling the oil.
Was it last week, May, mentioned that there was a brand new constitution set up to be implemented if there were overwhelming domestic problems that necessitated restructuring the government quickly?
I said that the government for 6 years has been planning, came out with a new constitution, yeah.
And lo and behold, you brought the comparison of the new constitution in, and wow, I was just looking at it before we went on the air. And maybe we can go over this and discuss it. Maybe since all I have to do is read, maybe I can just bring up some of these points
here. You can bring up some of these points about the new constitution. Let me explain that there are a lot of things that get in the news that affect your lives if you want to read it out there. You know, like this person said, nobody can say we don't have the facts. The difference between my research and a lot of other people's is that when I see these things, I put them in a filing cabinet and save them. And I promised I'd bring in this article, Phil, but I didn't realize this article is from the New York Times in 1970, and we'll read it, and you can read some of this. But the man who wants to do away with trial by jury, who got that into the new Constitution, is Warren Burger, now Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. He visited the center out in Santa Barbara that drew up this new Constitution that we may need, because he says 1970 and 1970s, it's outdated to have the old Constitution. It was Warren Burger who came out to Santa Barbara and said that the guarantee of trial by jury in an adversary trial, it slows the wheel of justice and the adversary system. That it requires a formal case with two opponents, but it does not necessarily produce justice. Now, Phil, you can read some of this Constitution, but before you listeners just shake your head and say this will never happen, let me tell you that after working on this for 6 years, almost all the colleagues at the Center in Santa Barbara approved of this Constitution. It took 6 years to write. They approved of it. And the man who came out to see them, who added the worst clauses in it, is the Justice of the Supreme Court right now. Read a few of the proposals, Phil. It makes me sick to read them. You take over.
Well, the present Constitution, as it's structured now, has a United States of America composed of sovereign states. There are now 50 of those states, with all powers not delegated to the national government reserved to the states. Under this proposed Constitution, it is the United Republics of America, a nation divided into not more than 20 republics, with each republic containing no less than 5% of the nation's population. Powers similar to the state's powers are granted to the republics, whose governments may be removed by the National Senate or for corruption or ineptitude. The National Senate is something that's interesting, too. Because let's jump down to the National Senate. The Senate we have today is two persons from each state elected for six-year terms. The National Senate under this new Constitution, which we're not making up, by the way, this was made up for us and
like
published in the New York Times.
It's like the War of the Martians and Orson Welles did.
And the National Senate would serve for life. For life. It's composed of former presidents, vice presidents, and other former high public officials, plus some members selected by the president, judiciary, and House of Representatives. This Senate would have power to object to any measure approved by the House except the annual budget. And then, of course, we had mention of the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives would be similar to the present House, except that it would have 400 members, with 100 elected at large and the rest from districts. Also,
how do you like?
Also, the seniority system of selecting committee chairman would be eliminated, and no chairman could serve longer than 6 years. Now, that doesn't sound like a bad idea.
Well,
but that may be the only part of it that doesn't. Then we go down here to the judicial system. The Supreme Court is abolished, and its powers divided among a High Court of the Constitution, a High Court of Appeal, and special courts of claims, rights and duties, administrative settlements, tax appeals, and arbitration review. The principal justice, replacing the office of chief justice, would be chosen for a term of 12 years. The High Court of the Constitution must advise the Senate on the constitutionality of questionable measures passed by the House. If the High Court declares a law unconstitutional, the Senate may overrule the decision.
The Senate
really has the power here.
See, the Senate isn't elected. It's only, you know, it's military people. It's appointed. The Senate makes every decision.
Yeah, the Senate is selected by the president, the judiciary, and the House.
And it stays there for life.
And their term is for life. Now, the president is not elected for life. The president is elected to 1 9-year term unless he's rejected by the electorate after 3 years. He has no responsibility over administrative agencies, but concentrates his efforts on foreign affairs and foreign policy.
He's going to be there for life. 9 years means that he doesn't have to account to anybody. Their explanation was that the president then doesn't have to account to people, so he can make decisions that he wants that aren't fly-by-night pressures. That's like in Greece.
Now, we are reading, in case you're wondering, from the proposed United Republics of America Constitution to replace the Constitution, which is in effect now. As far as elections go, an electoral branch would oversee the organizations of parties, nominations, and elections, campaign funds, codes of fair practice,
etc. The government.
As you establish an electoral branch, this is opposed to where national parties weren't even contemplated in the Constitution that we have now.
Yeah.
And the elections were left to be conducted by the states.
But don't forget, with your House of Representatives, so you have 100 elected at large, and the rest from districts. The whole electoral thing is selected, actually, then by the Senate. Their committees are going to make up everything.
Yeah, the Senate's
making up like
the Senate turns out to be all the former presidents and vice presidents.
And military advisors, yeah. And
that's your Senate.
They control the election, the financing, who's to run, which candidates.
There are a couple other minor provisions in here, the planning agency and regulatory agencies, and then you get down to the Bill of Rights. And, of course, the first 8 amendments to the Constitution now state fundamental liberties of citizens that may not be infringed upon by the government. Under this new Constitution, there is no Bill of Rights.
Completely gone.
None whatsoever. But the fundamental safeguards included in various portions are virtually identical to the present ones. There are some notable differences, though. There's no right to trial by jury, which Chief Justice Berger was responsible for.
You do away with the Bill of Rights, and you do away with the trial by jury.
Right to trial by jury, and there also is no right to bear arms. The National Rifle Association will be grieved to hear that.
Well, no, they won't, because they will get permission. You see, like in Greece, when Greece was overthrown, all arms were called in. Yeah, I mean, the Rifle Association may have a fuss about, like, I'm sure there are people in Greece that wanted their arms for hunting. But in order to protect this new Senate and this new system, you have to pull in all the arms before you have another revolution.
There is also a prohibition against unlicensed possession of lethal weapons.
Yeah. They're going to make sure you don't get... This is why Greece has been overthrown for 5 years. There's no way to get back, because you can't even, except with matches, there's no way that you can fight them now, the tanks and so forth, Now, that's the new Constitution. And then, as I say...
The way it can be amended, too. Let's get on to that
In
a minute when we'll break the station. Amendments to this new Constitution can be proposed by a council of top judges, approved by the President and the Senate, ratified by the majority in national elections, and after 5 presidential terms, the entire Constitution may be rewritten and submitted to ratification by majority in national election, the election of which is overseen by the electoral branch,
the
electoral branch, which is overseen by the Senate. So all in all, the new Constitution for the United States that could be implemented. It's all prepared and ready to go if it can be put through. Now, we'll break the station and identify this and then come back and talk about the man who wrote this this up. This is Dialogue Conspiracy, and the station is KLRB FM, Carmel, 24 hours a day.